Welcome to Lost and Starting Over with Linda Ballesteros. Death, sickness, unemployment, sadness, depression, divorce. Do you feel like you're alone in any of this? Well, you're not. Together we can find a way out. Get ready for Lost and Starting Over, a show on the Tub Talk Radio Network. Now here's your host, Linda Ballesteros.
Hey folks, welcome to Lost and Starting Over. This is Linda Ballesteros. Thank you so much for joining me today. You know, I always say thanks so much for spending time with me because, you know, time is that one commodity that you just can't get back. So if someone spends some time with you, know that they're offering you something that they will never regain again. So make it count. Make it valuable there. I wanted to make a big announcement here because, as most of you know, I really got my start on radio through Tough Talk Radio Network. My friend Tony Gambone talked me into it, and I did it kicking and screaming. I will admit that. And I was one of his first hosts on the Tough Talk Radio Network. But I didn't understand, and the reason that I was so resistant, I didn't understand why people would want to listen to me. But when I realized that the shows were not about me, I could see value in that. So over the last 8 years or so, it seems like it was just yesterday that I had sweaty palms and was taking all kinds of rescue remedy and everything else to have my first shows. Over the years, I have interviewed some amazing people, and many of those people are still very, very good friends of mine. And I just feel so blessed to have had that opportunity to speak to people in Greece, in Africa, in Taiwan. I cannot tell you the places around the world where I have interviewed guests and they've shared their story. Well, Tough Talk Radio Network is bringing back three shows. And one of those shows is my business show, which is Empower Radio. I say it's a business show, but I also weave in a lot of personal development in that because you guys know that if you're out there and you're in business, before you leave every day, you will need to make sure that you've done your personal work, done your, whether it's prayer work, whether it's spiritual work, something, because by the end of the day, if not, you'll come home like you've been beat up all day. So it's a tough world out there sometimes for entrepreneurs, so we need all the help that we can get. But with that being said, I'm not sure of the exact date that the first show is going to air. Just kind of follow me. If you're not following me on social media, be sure to do so, and you'll see the post of all the upcoming shows. But just wanted to give you a heads up for that because we're pretty excited. There's going to be a home improvement show as well as a Christian show. So we've kind of touched on a lot of different areas that maybe might be of interest to you. Now, today we are on Lost and Starting Over. And, you know, I tell you so many times that loss is something that we all experience, and it comes in many forms. It looks very different, and we all manage it differently. And over the last year or so, since I lost my husband, I've interviewed people who have gone through losses and different types of losses. You know, we've talked about job loss. We've talked about losing a relationship through a divorce. We've talked about losing a child. So we've talked about a lot of different losses. And with each one of them, I have to tell you, I've learned something. I've learned a different way. I've learned that above all, not to beat myself up over it. If there is grieving that needs to happen, if those waves of emotions happen to set in one day and I'm just driving down the street, you know, it's okay. It is okay. It's all part of the process. Well, today our guest is Dr. Julie Reardon, and she is a Harvard-educated integrative family medicine doctor with more than 14 years of primary care and leadership experience. She brings a physician-led complete wellness experience to her patients in the Austin area. So we're going to be talking to Dr. Julie about integrative medicine. Welcome, Dr. Julie, to the show.
Thank you. I'm so excited to be here.
Well, I'm really glad for you to be here as well, because that phrase, integrative medicine, is relatively new. And I'll be honest with you, I'm not sure exactly what that means. Can you tell us a little bit more about what integrative medicine means?
So integrative medicine means taking the best of all medicine and using it patient appropriate for each individual. So it means using what we traditionally think of as medicine, or what they'll use maybe the word allopathic medicine, the stuff we get by going to the doctor and getting certain medications or using certain things in trauma and doing all the things that I learned in medical school that got me my MD. But integrative also uses the ancient wisdom of healing times and of maybe some mysticism and some of the things that maybe we don't have, some of the things that are taught in medical school. So integrative medicine looks at the full picture and may tie in, say, acupuncture or healing touch, or different modalities that aren't traditionally thought of, but looking at them in light of the full picture for every individual. It also integrates nutrition and lifestyle medicine a lot more. I think often in our regular medicine, we go in and we expect a pill to fix something and turn it off, and especially with people who are suffering sort of loss and starting over again, we need to look at things beyond that and look at shifts in lifestyle that can help reset people's bodies and help them feel empowered and the best that they can. There's an answer.
And that's great information, Dr. Julie, because it almost seems as though this still may take another century or so for this to happen, but it seems as though what you refer to as allopathic medicine, that they are becoming a little more open to, say, like you said, healing touch, whether that's Reiki or and the use of herbs, maybe traditional Chinese
Absolutely.
Herbs. So are you seeing more and more of that accepted by traditional medicine, as we call it?
So I say that even in the last 5 years, I'm seeing a renaissance, per se, of people open to some other approaches. But at the same time, I think that sometimes people go back to what they – sometimes fear prevents people from opening up the box and looking at things beyond. And then sometimes fear, when we hit more rock bottom and things don't work well, then they'll open the box and look. And so I think we still, in more allopathic medicine, like the research that can support some of those things. But I see what's beautiful is one of my mentors says that the mysticism deserves a mechanism. And what seeing is this whole new phase that the mysticism is getting a mechanism. We are getting more research that's showing that it's not woo-woo to meditate, that meditation actually changes our genes and changes how our body's hormones are used and adjusted, and they help us live longer, that meditation actually protects us from cancer. And so it's a fascinating thing that we are getting a mechanism that's being shown in the research. And so I, you know, that's such an exciting time for me to practice medicine and be able to use a lot of these modalities that are combining combining and giving validity to the things that really are empowering people to feel better.
It's interesting.
I mean,
I was going to say, it's interesting that you mentioned that, Julie, because I remember reading something a year or so ago that that was talking about how MD Anderson in Houston, which is a well-known hospital that specializes in treating cancer patients, they had start incorporating meditation classes and Reiki classes. And so the patients would have an option to plug into that when they're going through treatment or when they were in recovery. And I thought that alone was a huge step. Now, with that being said, Dr. Julie, how are the doctors learning this? Is it being incorporated in their training as they're going through med school?
Right. Well, that's a great question, and I haven't been in med school for many years. But what I did my integrative medicine training through Dr. Andrew Weil's program out of the University of Arizona, and there is a fellowship in integrative medicine that I attended and participated in, which was so life changing and wonderful for me to kind of bring it full circle with some of my medical training, and I think that more, you know, that some physicians are seeking more training in that realm, and then they are doing different rotations in integrative medicine in different specialties sort of within people's post-MD training as they do their residencies. And I think even in medical school, they're starting to shift the paradigm as we get more research. Here in Austin, we have a new medical school. And it's very exciting because there's a movement to say, hey, wait a minute, that we need to teach some of these doctors even, say, meditation and maybe look at nutrition and from different eyes. And so I think we're starting to shift the medical education. But what's also happening is a lot of doctors are saying, hey, what we're doing isn't working. Like, they're burnt out as much as the patients are.
Sure.
And they're saying, wait a minute, we need to do something different. How do we do this? And they're seeking further education. We call it CME, or continuing medical education. There's also the Institute for Functional Medicine, where I've done quite a bit of training. And it's helping us sort of open our eyes to different tools that we give ourselves as physicians, and then also give our patients, because, again, this revolving door of 8-minute visits and just giving another pill for it doesn't cut it for anybody. And we know our healthcare system's kind of a huge mess right now. And so we're all looking for a shift and sort of how do we start over with how do we rebuild the system.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Now, Dr. Julie, what caused you, or what was that moment where you said you wanted more than just what you learned as a med student? What made you look into integrative medicine?
Right. You know, I reflected on that, and I've had many people ask me that. I think mine has been more of a journey and not one particular situation. I think I chose family medicine because I liked a holistic approach in general. I liked looking at the family dynamics, and as an undergrad at Harvard, I studied psychology, so I kind of liked that big picture view, and then even had done some international travel and understanding other cultures before I went to medical school. I kind of was bent that way. But then, again, you kind of go with the rigidity of what you need to learn in medical school and what I needed to learn doing, you know, practicing family medicine. But I always kind of had my eyes open and my heart open to a bigger picture. And as I have two wonderful children. My husband and I have two boys. And as they were getting a little bit older, I was able to give myself some more training and then sought out the Integrative Medicine Fellowship and was able to kind of give that legitimacy of the training to how I thought we should practice medicine anyway. Because I feel like integrative medicine is just good medicine. So it's been a journey. I'd say I saw over the years a lot of patients who it doesn't work, the system wasn't working for them, and a lot of loss and trauma happens around health and our health sort of crises. And I felt like we were maybe perpetuating the problem sometimes in how we were approaching it. Kind of watching and observing, and then, you know, being blessed on my journey that I've been able to get these other tools and this extra training. So it's a process. And it's been by seeing those things happen. And yet I wasn't going to throw it all out. You know, one of them, you know, our older son was born premature. And if we didn't have the NICU and the high technology that saved his life, that's huge. And again, a lot of our own medical issues within the family, we need to integrate it. We need to have all of the modalities available. And so again, all those things have contributed to who I am and what I do today.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think having the choices, Dr. Julie, that is one of the big things is that we just have the choice to for us to work with a doctor that has a tool belt that has more than just prescription medicine or surgery or that path. Just knowing that you've got those choices is comforting for me. So you mentioned how many times a loss is a loss of health. Well, I experienced that watching my husband lose his health. Now, how do you incorporate integrative medicine in helping those that are either losing their health, they've lost a loved one to cancer or a disease, or they're just struggling with other losses in their life? How does integrative medicine help them with that?
So I think one of the things, Linda, I didn't mention when you asked kind of what integrative medicine is from the very beginning, I'd say one of the big pieces is the doctor-patient relationship. And so I think having a safe place for anybody who's experienced their loss to a safe place to talk about it and to share their story. There's a whole other field of something called narrative medicine, which is very therapeutic and just being able to share your story. And then being able to feel safe within that you're not going to be criticized or demonized for things that you're doing or not doing. Or a lot of times when we go through loss, we do what if, what could have, we change different things. Our monkey brain really turns on as to what other circumstances could have happened. And so it's really kind of hearing from, being able to have a patient hear from the physician that what they're experiencing is a true physiologic kind of reaction, that there's a whole hormone cascade that can happen within their body and that it can affect their adrenal glands and their cortisol, and that they're may crave things for a more immediate comfort. And what is happening with that, and understanding some of those cycles, it empowers them again, and that they feel that they're part of the journey. So it really depends on what state and where someone is at their place in their crisis, or in their loss or rebuilding, of where our conversation goes. But a lot of times I talk to my patients, I have a picture of a bridge in my office, and I point to it I don't know how many times a day, saying, we all need a bridge to help us get across this. And sometimes the bridge may be this medication. Sometimes the bridge may be, you know, this change of behavior or combination. We have to choose which bridge we're going to go across and then work together to help you get across it. And so it's understanding, you know, what's maybe happening in their body or in their brain, and kind of connecting that for them. I think I was even just talking to someone this morning about it's the mind-body connection, but it's also the body-mind connection. And they go together. And when we experience loss, it's understanding how both of those work.
Mm-hmm. And that makes complete sense, because there were times that after losing my husband that I would think, oh, I'm doing really pretty good. I've made some major changes in my life. I've moved, and I'm thinking, okay, I think I got my feet back on the ground. And then I would hear a song, and the wave of emotions would flood me. And if I didn't understand that that was normal, I would think that I'd had a huge setback. And it would be very easy for me to feel like, oh, you're not doing as good as you thought you were. So how do you explain that process to your patients where they feel that they're not having huge setbacks and that some of this is just very normal?
Right. Well, I think part of it is, yeah, just normalizing it, helping empower them to help them understand what's happening, that we have a lot of, again, a lot more research that's going into the neuroplasticity of the brain and how the brain develops and how we can kind of help highways in our brain recover from stroke differently or recover from PTSD differently, but there are certain highways that get paved. And understanding that when something triggers, whether it be a song or a smell or, I don't know, all sorts of different triggers that can then cause a bunch of reactions sort of within our brain and our body, that they are wired together, and help them understand that it's okay, that's okay and that's normal. Those buttons get pressed, but they can go back in, and with some daily tools, oftentimes it's meditation and exercise and good nutrition, those things can help them over time not have the cascade happen as intensely. Mm-hmm. And some of us also, I use genetics in terms of the mysticism and the mechanism. It's very interesting for me to use genetic testing in my practice sometimes to, again, help us understand where maybe our body makes different enzymes, and they're unique for each of us, but those different enzymes and how our body metabolizes them might put some of us more at risk than others for how we sense these things differently. And just having people understand that is very empowering.
I would imagine so. Now, you mentioned the adrenals earlier, and I know that in today's society, the way life is set up, we don't give our adrenals a break. So tell me a little bit about how the adrenals actually contribute, or they create this a stronger sense of stress when there's loss in our life.
Right. So there's a book that I've studied in some of my research over time, and it's kind of funny. The title is Why Zebras Don't Get Ulcers. And it's kind of the idea that we can be, if we're hit by some kind of shock or something, then we can, lift up the car or run away or be able to have an adrenal rush, that the adrenal glands sort of release that cortisol that helps to protect us. But it also affects how our blood sugars develop, how we release sort of the stress hormones in our body. But if we're shot in stress all the time and it doesn't turn off, that's not a natural sort of state. we're like the zebra. The zebra can get scared by the tiger and can run off and then can then go like recover at some time. But if we don't ever give ourselves recovery time, then it kind of starts this whole circuit of the of too much cortisol and too much adrenal stimulation that over time can even burn out the adrenal glands for some patients. So there's different levels and extreme with what I call the hypothalamic pituitary adrenal axis. But it's you know, a lot of times in the lay literature, people just say, well, I've, you know, the adrenals are just shot. The adrenals are fatigued. And what are the things that can be done to kind of give an oasis to help those recover more? So I educate my patients a lot on what's happening within that chemical cascade within their body, particularly with the adrenal glands and how that communicates with a lot of other glands within the body, and how when you are shocked or had like one thing after another, after another, after another, how does your body recover from that? And it needs some extra tools to bridge them back. It can be devastating to the point where people don't even want to get off the couch. And that's normal. And yet not if we stick stuck there and somebody doesn't help them have a bridge to get some of those hormones going again.
Mm-hmm. Now, Dr. Julie, would that contribute to depression?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Again, it's a complex hormonal kind of combination, but when your adrenals are stuck in that flight or fight for so long and then they don't get a chance to recover, then it can lead to a bunch of sort of inflammation and empty neurotransmitters kind of within the brain that can make you feel real low and stuck, which is depression. We can take it as a very complex process or a very simple process, but when you feel that sad, it definitely can be related to having been stuck in that flight or fight for too long.
Mm-hmm. And how do you give your adrenals a break? I know that, you know, there certainly it would have to be a lifestyle change. What are some things that if somebody's listening and they're thinking, you know, I think I may be stuck there, what is a small step someone could take to give their adrenals maybe a bit of a break?
Right. Well, I'm going to give you my little acronym that I got when I did my integrative medicine training. And it struck me that you know, people always talk about diet or other lifestyle things, and I was like, it really should be live it. And how do we start? How do we live it? And live it, my acronym is learn, incorporate, vitalize, exercise, imagine. And so for someone who's going through, like, you know, they're like, I'm stuck, what do I do? Number one is learn, even just in a little way, that your body is doing the best it can under the circumstances. And then we can learn more and you can understand a lot more if you wanted the whole hormone cascades and understand a lot of the other different nuances. But first learn, but just know that your body's doing the best it can. Then you incorporate some other changes, whether you need to start, you know, eating again and eating whole food that's not it's processed because it's going to give you some of the right vitamins. And then vitalize, and that vitalize piece, and that's part of the bridge. A lot of times when your adrenals are overshocked or whatever, that's where I recommend a lot of times we get adequate B vitamins because the B vitamins can help the adrenal glands recover. I recommend omega-3 fish oil because our brains are fat and we need good fat to turn off the inflammation. So there's a lot of research on omega-3 fish oil helping us. I recommend people get their vitamin D levels checked and get adequate vitamin D, because there's a lot of research about that. So those are kind of a couple little vitalized things. But then also working with an integrative medicine physician or even your regular physician who will help you hopefully look at some of those bigger pieces to say, are there other things going on with you hormonally? Are we missing anything else? That kind of just to get you back on board. But it's just doing those tools to vitalize. And then another thing to kind of help reset is exercise, but some people like kind of go overkill with that if they're not ready. It may be just going for a short walk, or it may be just, you know, being able to stand in certain yoga stance positions or certain things that help your body then tell your brain it's okay. Whether it be when your adrenals and you're feeling like all shaky and not right, maybe it's laying down with your feet up against the wall. And that lowers your cortisol and can just help you relax and sleep better at night. And then we're imagine is guided doing some sort of meditation in some way. And I recommend different apps for different people or different tools to help them practice their brain slowing down enough if they can. And it may be only for 30 seconds at first. And it's not, the normal expectation is your brain doesn't, will have a monkey brain. We are going to think of other things, but you're training it to kind of feel like it's safe again. And thank, my last bit of the livid is practicing some gratitude and being able to practice what's right. And, instead of what's wrong. And it's so easy, even in the most devastating times, we just can cascade into everything seeming wrong. And so being able to just find any little bit of gratitude, whether it's the bird outside or that somebody smiled at us or the blanket that you have to kind of snuggle under. Just being able to notice those things are really important.
And I tell you, well, actually, it's not. It's a perfect answer because it's something that people can remember. So it's live it, folks. Live it. It is learn, incorporate, vitalize, exercise, imagine, and think. And so, you know, all of those are critical components in healing and reducing stress. Dr. Julie, we need to take a real quick commercial break. But I would love when we come back from the commercial break, if you could possibly give us an example of someone that you have worked with that was able to work through a stressful situation by using some of the tools that you gave them.
Great.
Very good. Okay, folks, we'll be right back after this quick commercial break.
So you think you're tough enough for Tough Talk with Tony Gambone? Tony knows how to dish it out. Can you take it? Tony Gambone is a communicator, mentor, and entrepreneur whose tough style and generous spirit quickly garnered recognition in many a competitive arena. Now he's bringing his intelligence and knowledge to you as a hard-hitting radio talk show host and thought leader. Tune in and see for yourself. Tough Talk with Tony Gambone. It's a sure thing. To find out more, go to Tough Talk with Tony Gambone.
Tune in every Thursday morning at 9 a.m. to Tough Talk Christian Radio with Tony Gambone. Tough Talk Christian Radio is for those who want to share and receive expressions of faith that will help you take the next step in your relationship with Christ. Listen in to hear from others about their experiences of faith and the love of Christ. Call in to share your experiences at 347-989-1363. Learn more by going to toughtalkchristianradio.com.
Hey folks, welcome back to Lawson Starting Over. This is Linda Ballesteros, and my guest today is Dr. Julie Reardon. She is an integrative medicine doctor, and she's been giving us some great information on how she works with her clients and her patients when they experience stress, when they experience loss. And it's great information, Dr. Julie. Do you have a client that you could share with us, maybe a situation where you were able to help them to get across that bridge, so to speak, that you mentioned earlier?
Right. Well, I'm trying to think of what we'll call it in doctor talk, a case study of somebody that I can present to you. And I'm kind of just going to pick one up off the cuff. And it may be a combination of many different patients that I may have. But let's pick a 45-year-old woman who is recently dealt with a child who's got their own health issues, and we can, a lot of stress, we'll just put with that particular situation. She came in unable to sleep at night, wasn't able to work anymore. And she was having terrible gut symptoms, and this had gone on for several months. And it seemed that that the medications that her regular doctor had given her didn't really work for her, and actually maybe made her feel more anxious. What's happened with her is she came in, and I heard her story. We ordered some labs to make sure we weren't missing some other pieces. And then all of my patients get a prescription for kind of what are they doing with their food and their eating. Made sure she was on a diet that was good whole food, and that she was eating and not too restrictively. But in her particular case, because her gut was really aggravated, we did change some of the things that triggered her gut. So we took out some dairy and some bread for a while and added in a lot more vegetables and fruits. And then we also incorporated some movement that worked into her day. And for her, it was some sun salutations, not going to a big, vigorous yoga class, but doing three sun salutations in the morning and the evening. And then in the evening also, because she felt so anxious and had trouble breathing, we had her elevate her legs at night to help her sort of relax and have a bedtime ritual with that. A lot of times people sometimes self-medicate with maybe some extra alcohol or other things. So we took out some of those other things that she was doing and gave her another ritual that helped her feel safe and had a plan to go along with it to help her go to sleep. Then we added some fish oil and some vitamin D and some B vitamin and some herbs. There's herbs that are called adaptogens. And there's one called ashwagandha that I really like a lot because it's the wired and tired herb. I also, because of some of her other gut issues, we added in a good probiotic because when the gut isn't happy and when you're shocked and had so much stress and other things going on, if we help the gut calm down, that ends up helping the brain calm down and vice versa. So we added in a probiotic. And then just a lifeline for her to be able to reach out to the office and communicate with us and to be able to give us feedback on how things were working with a follow-up plan. Also continuing to support the work that she was already doing to process this shock of what had been going on with her son. Mm-hmm. I'm kind of picking sort of different pieces of different stories, but that gives sort of you an idea. And what happened is that even giving some of those things, even within the first week, she started to feel more empowered and to feel calmer. And then her gut symptoms started to get better. And it started her back on the track to live it instead of feel like she was suffering more. And so sort of believing and knowing that she was going to feel better is also a big part of the process. So there's just kind of, and we would follow up you know, several times depending on her I'm picking a sort of amalgam of a patient, but she would she'd follow up in maybe 2 weeks to 4 weeks, but maybe talk to someone in my office like a week later to kind of just say, make sure things are going okay.
Well, you know, one of the things that I realized when I went through the loss of my husband, now I'd lost both parents and I'd lost a sibling, but the loss of my husband was very different and it was a shock to the core to me. But what I realized is from time to time, and I have family and I have an incredible support system around me, but I would feel alone. And with you offering, encouraging your patients to call, to check in, for y'all to call and check in, that means more than you can imagine, because it is very easy to get to isolate yourself during a loss, because to begin with, you really don't want to go out there and talk about it to everybody, you know, and if people see you, they're like, oh, I'm so sorry to hear, or how's this going? So just to have a connection with you and your office, Dr. Julie, is huge. So I really commend you for doing that. It means more than you can imagine. But it sounds to me, too, like you touch on a lot of different areas that could possibly help them. It's not one thing that will make
right.
it all
not a
go
formula.
Away. That's
People
correct.
Call and ask what my protocol is. Mm-hmm. And I can't give them a protocol. I use a lot of the literature and a lot of the information, but it's very individualized, because it may be that, and when I listed all those things in my sample patient, it may be that it's only one thing that you can do right now, and that's okay.
Mm-hmm.
It's okay. Just let's just pick one thing and start living it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I didn't even mention breath, breathing. Mm-hmm. That's probably the first place I start, teaching mm-hmm. them how to breathe again. Teaching mm-hmm. any of us, when we are shocked and we've been traumatized, we forget to breathe, because we're like the zebra who's running from the tiger, but we can't stay stuck in that loop. So we have to start breathing again. And it's amazing just being aware of your breath and doing the 4-7-8 breathing exercise, where you breathe in for 4 seconds, you hold your breath for 7, and you breathe out for 8, and you do it 4 times, what that does. Just breathe.
Mm-hmm. And I'm pretty independent person, and I can make decisions, but I found that it was, I had to take baby steps. I have never had to take baby steps before. But I had to take baby steps. But the biggest thing I had to do here, Dr. Julie, was give myself credit for taking that baby step. It wasn't the size step I would have normally taken. So I could have very easily have said, yeah, but, you know, you should have gone a lot further. How do you work with your patients to say they're okay where they are as long as they're taking those baby steps?
Absolutely, and I think that's one of the gifts I have in my practice and in my practice style. I think sometimes when we, even the physicians that are getting lots of these other tools, then we overload everybody with all of the tools. And I think really meeting you where you're at, we've all heard of placebo, and placebo, you know, some people are like, it was just placebo. I'm like, that's a real big, powerful thing that our brain has that much power. It can help you feel better. There's also something called nocebo. And nocebo is negative, that you can make yourself have these side effects, or you can make bad things happen when you get stuck in that other loop. And so when people get stuck in that should loop of I should have done this and I should have done that and I didn't, then they can get stuck in making themselves feel worse also. So really just slowing down and being present in the moment and being aware and having self-compassion is so in me having compassion for my patients, that's like, I guess, number one, number two, and number three. And when we go through a huge loss, that's what we need. That's what we need the most. We need other people's compassion, but we need our own self-compassion.
Most
and
definitely.
So being able to do that and have whatever we're doing, just, don't get rid of your shoulds. Come from a place of, you know, where you're present in the moment and doing the best you can within those circumstances.
Very, very good advice there. I tell you what, the time goes by so fast, Dr. Julie. Before we go any further, I've got three questions. It's the three questions that I ask all of my guests. But before we do that, if someone's listening and they want to hear more about you, they want to learn more about your practice, how would they do that?
Probably the best place for them to go is my website, which is laketravisintegrative.com. So laketravisintegrative.com. Anyway,
lovely.
That's my website where I try to have my story there and links to some information. I'm trying to blog some more because my big goal and dream is that I love connecting with my patients one-on-one because I think that's so much where the magic is. But I think having some of those tools be beyond that and having a reliable source that I even just have out there on my website for anybody. And then there's links to my Twitter and my Facebook page as well on my website.
Perfect. Very good. Okay, so the first question here is, what one thing has helped you the most when dealing with loss or when you're helping your patients deal with loss? So what's that one thing that you would say has helped the most in kickstarting that?
I think slowing down to, again, be self-compassionate in the moment and connecting to something bigger in the moment, whether it be nature or faith or just sort of grounding in that and not thinking too much of the past or the future, sort of staying present in the present moment and connecting to something bigger than we are.
I'll tell you, one of the things that helped me was when you mentioned exercise. You know, some people think, like you said, you go to the extreme, you're at the gym, you know, six times a week. But what helped me is I took Tai Chi classes. I'd never taken that before, but it was a very gentle thing. In fact, folks, if you're interested, you can go back and listen to the interview that I had with my Tai Chi instructor, Susan Thompson. So you can go back and search that. But she talked about, you know, the grounding, exactly what you're talking about, the slowing things down. And it helped me more than a lot of the other exercises. They were too much. They were too harsh for me at that time.
Right.
But the Tai Chi was very gentle.
What I was said earlier. There's the mind-body connection, but there's also the body-mind connection. Mm-hmm. So anybody that's sort of dealing with a loss, there's sort of the acute loss, and then there's the longer-term sort of adjustment to this loss. And in each of those times, there's a bunch of connection that's going on that your brain wants to just take over, which is normal. But using breath, using one, even like, you know, the Tai Chi is great to join a class eventually, but even in the moment, being able to just sort of get your body in a certain positions to kind of just help the body communicate with the brain. And that's why I find the breath is really like a great way to help reset it. Just putting a timer on and noticing your breath for 5 minutes.
Great advice. So the next question is, how can a friend or a family member help someone who is struggling with loss? So if we're watching a loved one go through this, What can we do to support them?
I think, as we said, you feel very isolated when you go through loss. I mean, this, and so just being there and being able to listen, or listen to the silence with them, or listen to their tears, but just helping the isolation be less, be there less. And so just really being there, I think, is probably the best thing that we can do.
Mm-hmm. I had friends that would just send me a text that said, I'm thinking of you. And, you know, there wasn't anything that I really needed other than to know that someone was thinking of me. I didn't want a conversation. I didn't want to meet over a cup of coffee. I didn't want any of that. But technology today will allow us to connect with people in and still leaving that distance. Like you were saying, the silence. The silence is still there, but they don't feel isolated. That's different.
Right, right. Just, you know, I don't know, any virtual hugs or however you can be there, or real hugs. And there's so many different modalities that we can do that. But part of it is helping people not feel so isolated, because that's what our brain and our body get triggered with when we go through terrible things. Just being there for people is so important.
Absolutely. So the last question here is, since loss is something that we will all experience at some time in our life, is there anything that we can do or learn that would better equip us to handle future loss?
Yeah, well, you know, I think that's where my live it thing comes out, right? Because when we live it, if we're living our lives, life is full of loss and transition and change. Some of them, you know, are totally not the script that we prepared for. They're not what we imagined things were going to be like. And so if you, going back to that live it acronym, kind of learning about your body, learning about how your body responds to things, incorporating healthy lifestyle changes, you know, using some things to help vitalize yourself, exercising, keeping that body-mind connection as well as the mind-body connection, and imagine, and that's where I'd say that the doing some sort of mindfulness meditation, having a daily practice of centering yourself and finding that ground and finding that way to calm your monkey brain, even when things are going good. If we do that on a daily basis, then we can fall back on that when the hits the fan, which it will, because that's what happens in life. And so having some sort of daily meditative practice is, I think, a real great thing that we can do, as well as a daily gratitude practice. And so there's the live it.
Yeah, very good. Julie, is there anything that you want to share with our listeners that we haven't covered that would help them through a loss and starting over phase in their life?
I guess just a reminder that we're all on this journey together, and you're not alone. You're not alone.
Very good. One more time, if they're listening and they want to hear more about Dr. Julie Reardon, where would they find that?
They can go to my website, which is laketravisintegrative.com. And there's places to connect to my Facebook page as well as Twitter, and a way to send me a message if you'd like.
Perfect. Dr. Julie, thank you so much for taking time out of your busy day and for the work that you do in helping people get through life.
It's an honor to speak with you today, Linda. God bless. Take care.
Same here. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Well, folks, you know, Dr. Julie gave us some great tips that we can use for our everyday life. You don't have to be in a crisis to find yourself in a stressful situation at work and maybe just take a few minutes to breathe. So just keep that in mind. And as always, I'm going to leave you with a quote. Mind-body medicine should not be an alternative, nor should complementary and integrative medicine be something doctors are not exposed to during their training. You heard we talked a little bit about that with Dr. Julie. This is a quote by Bernie Siegel, MD. He is an internationally recognized expert in the field of cancer treatment and complementary holistic medicine. So I would say if you are listening out there right now, maybe be open to exploring, educating yourself. That was one of the things that Dr. Julie talked about in the Live It formula, learn. So learning a little bit more about what your options may be and possibly bring that up when you go to the doctor next time. See what their position is on that. Get some feedback on that. There is so much for us to learn and to know out there, but I think the first thing is for us to learn ourselves and our body. So I'll leave you with that today. Folks, thank you so much for joining me today on Loss and Starting Over, and I look forward to having you listen in, tune in, on my new show, Empower Radio Show. Thanks again.
This has been an episode of Loss and Starting Over, a weekly show on the Tough Talk Radio Network. Remember that whatever you're going through, you don't have to go through it alone. We're here to help. Come back next week for another episode of Loss and Starting Over with Linda Ballesteros. Thank you for listening.